Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queercast show number 547. And folks, it is legal. It is legal. Well, it will be June 1st, but the bill has passed. SB 10 has passed in the House. Governor Quinn should be signing it by next week. And at that time, effective June 1st, GLBT people in the great state, the land of Lincoln, will be able to be fair and equal under the law in terms of marriage in the state of Illinois, which becomes 15 in the battle for marriage equality across the United States. It's fantastic to join some of our Midwest brothers and sisters in Iowa and Minnesota. And what a gay pride celebration we will have this June. I don't know if people were watching, but it was an exciting Tuesday. And to follow up today, I'm going to be talking with Jim Bennett from Lambda Legal. We're going to talk about what was really happening on the floor, what this means for us practically, and I just give a little history, bringing us all up to date on the fight for marriage equality. Was the march successful? What was the turning point? Who were the key people that we can thank today and tomorrow and for the years to come when we are treated equal? And I was just thinking, what an amazing thing to be a young person, to be a young person who's just coming out, to be a young person in Illinois who's dating, but, you know, definitely not thinking about adulthood and job and family and marriage yet. And what a transformation this will be, just to the psyche. Because I was saying to some friends, I had been very emotional these past couple of days after the vote passed, in just thinking, I really believe that the inability to commit to one another in a way that feels validated by our churches, validated by our state and our peers fully and protected fully, equal under the law. I wonder what a radical change that will make to young people's self-esteem, the choices of who they choose to partner with, what becomes important to them as adults. And I don't know, this is my own opinion, but I feel like, you know, I have wanted to have successful relationships. I've wanted to have happy relationships, but I never walked into relationships thinking that I am committing for life, that this is a commitment for all time. I know I am not speaking for all LGBT people. I know there are many LGBT people who have started families and have forged ahead and given protections to their family in whatever ways that they've been able to do that, either through civil unions of recent years or just through legal actions and legal expertise to protect their families, protect their relationships. But truly, I think on a fundamental level, it has shaped pretty much every choice I've made the past 20 years, what I did and didn't feel would be valid or have weight or have merit or have meaning or how it would be viewed. And obviously, I've lived my life very out and proud. I have not been a closeted member of this community pretty much from the day that I came out. But I have to admit there is something that has changed. I think people are going to look at us now. And when you start dating somebody, it's going to be, when are you going to commit? When are you two going to settle down? When are you going to make an honest man or woman of your girlfriend or boyfriend? And I don't think that those are always the questions. I'm not saying there aren't some exceptions to the rule, but that has not always been the overriding conversation from our friends and families, coworkers and colleagues when we as LGBT people enter into relationships. And so the perspective has changed, I believe. Time will tell, but I believe the lens has shifted. And I'm very interested to see what all of you think about this as well. And I'm interested what this will mean for my life. And I'm interested what this means for a 17, 16, 18-year-old LGBT person as well in their life living in Chicago, and especially what it means to someone like Art Johnson, Art and his partner Pepe, who've been together for decades and have been at the front lines of this, the owners of Sidetrack and great philanthropists who have had a relationship for many decades, and what this means for them, what a victory, what a triumph. Things are changing and it's time to celebrate. Lots of parties this week, but let me tell you what's going on in the GLBT news, what's going on in the theater scene, and then Jim Bennett, the Midwest Regional Director of Lambda Legal, here as we discuss marriage equality in Illinois on the Queercast.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
On November 7th, the U.S. Senate approved the flagship piece of legislation that the LGBT community has fought for almost two decades. The 64-32 vote marked the first time the Senate has approved the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA. The only other Senate vote in 1996 failed on a vote of 50-49. ENDA seeks to add language to the Federal Civil Rights Act to prohibit employers from taking adverse employment actions against employees or job applicants based on sexual orientation and gender identity.
In national elections on November 5th, lesbian Anise Parker won re-election for the third and final term as Houston's mayor. Term limits prevent Parker from running for a fourth term. Atlantic City, New Jersey has a gay mayor as well, Republican Don Guardian. Republican Chris Christie easily won re-election as New Jersey's governor. Bill de Blasio became New York City's first Democratic mayor in two decades, and Ed Murray became the first gay mayor of Seattle.
In Michigan, Royal Oak voters approved a human rights ordinance banning discrimination against people based on their sexual orientation and other factors. A similar ballot measure failed in 2001 by a 2-1 margin.
A retired United Methodist bishop performed a wedding for two gay men in Alabama, despite opposition from other church leaders. The ceremony took place at the Covenant Community Church, a United Church of Christ congregation in Birmingham.
Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel has directed National Guards throughout the country to process benefit applications for troops in same-sex marriages, regardless of their state laws. The Defense Secretary spoke out against the decision by certain National Guards to deny benefit applications for troops in same-sex marriages, adding that he's asked Chief of the National Guard Bureau, General Frank Grass, to take immediate action to remedy this situation.
The U.S. Military Academy at West Point marked a historic moment with the marriage of two former male graduates at its cadet chapel. Larry Choate III, 27, and Daniel Lennox, 28, were married before about 20 guests, making it the Academy's first wedding between two men.
Representative Mike Michaud, the Democrat from Maine, came out as gay in a column released to three of Maine's major news outlets. Michaud, who officially announced his gubernatorial bid in August, could become the first openly gay governor if successful in 2014.
The United States Senate has advanced the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, a bill meant to expand workplace protections for LGBT individuals, marking the chamber's first vote on the issue in more than 15 years. procedural vote, which required the support of 60 senators, was 61-30, as 7 Republicans and all Democrats voted for the measure. Despite the expected passage in the Senate, it will likely be blocked by the GOP-led House.
Phil Batt, one of Idaho's most popular GOP governors, is supporting LGBT rights. Batt has endorsed Idaho's Add the Words campaign, which aims to add sexual orientation and gender identity to the Human Rights Act.
Two private Indiana liberal arts colleges announced that they oppose the state's proposed constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. DePaul University and Wabash College said they have joined Freedom Indiana, a bipartisan grassroots coalition working to defeat the ban scheduled to be considered in the Indiana General Assembly early next year. The two colleges join Indiana University, a public university that's the largest in the state, with more than 110,000 students on 8 campuses statewide.
General Motors made a groundbreaking policy change and announced that the company would extend marriage benefits to the spouses of same-sex employees, even if the couple resides in a state where same-sex marriage isn't legal. The couple must have been legally married in one of the states in which same-sex marriage is legal. The changes will include pension plans, saving plans, health care plans for legally married same-sex couple.
A California student who identifies as agender is recovering from having reportedly been set on fire by a fellow teen while on board a moving bus. A 16-year-old Oakland High School student was arrested after setting fire to a skirt being worn by Sasha Fleischman, who had fallen asleep while returning home to East Oakland, California, on the bus. Fleischman, 18, does not identify as male or female, but rather as non-binary gender.
The Florida Supreme Court has ruled that a woman who donated an egg to her lesbian partner has parental rights to the child. The case involves two lesbians who began raising the child together. One donated an egg that was fertilized and implanted in the other. However, the Brevard County couple split 2 years after one woman gave birth in 2004, and the birth mother eventually left the country.
In world news, British authorities claimed that David Miranda, a partner of reporter Glenn Greenwald, was involved in terrorism when he tried to carry documents from the former U.S. intelligence contractor Edward Snowden to a London airport in August. Miranda was detained and questioned for 9 hours by British authorities at Heathrow Airport August 18th when he landed there from Berlin to change planes for a flight to Rio de Janeiro. After his release and return to Rio, Miranda filed a legal action against the British government, seeking the return materials authorities seized from him.
Barilla, the Italian company behind the chairman who said they never would have gay people in their advertisements, has now promised to be more diverse and inclusive. Among other things, the company plans to establish a new diversity and inclusion board.
In Italy, hundreds of gay rights activists held a candlelight vigil at Rome's Colosseum to call for an anti-homophobia law after a youth threw himself off the 11th story of a building in the Italian capital. The death of the 21-year-old, known publicly as Simone B., followed two other youth gay suicides this year in Rome.
Ireland will hold a referendum in mid-2015 on whether to allow same-sex marriage. The decision is a victory for the Deputy Prime Minister, who has been lobbying for a national vote. The vote will be held as part of a special Constitution Day, in which a wide-ranging referendum could result in other changes to the Republic's Constitution.
In Russia, the northern region of Arkhangelsk has become the first to repeal its local ban on homosexual propaganda to minors following 2 years of enforcement, only because there's a national law. The region, known as Arkhangel, was originally the second after Ryazan to enforce a local anti-gay law banning propaganda in 2011. However, lawmakers in Arkhangelsk believe there is no longer a need for a local law given the recent federal ban.
Pride House International, PHI, launched its efforts to partner with national houses at the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympic and Paralympic Games to create a network of venues, allowing for the promotion of the Olympic principle of sport for all. PHI is asking supporters to contact their national Olympic committees, asking them to host Pride House events. Russian authorities have rejected attempts to create a Pride House at Sochi.
In entertainment news, Chicago Cubs co-owner Pete Ricketts wants to make clear that it wasn't his idea for the baseball team to be one of the sponsors of the city's Gay Pride event. Ricketts, 49, wants to be a Republican candidate for governor of Nebraska, and some of his rivals are making an issue of the Major League Baseball's team's support for LGBT equality. Ricketts blames his sister, Laura, who is a lesbian and also one of the team's co-owners.
Diane Keaton plans to remake the popular lesbian-inclusive BBC series Last Tango in Halifax for U.S. television. The show focuses on the romance of a man and a woman, both in their 70s, who are former childhood sweethearts and have been reunited after both were widowed. The woman has a daughter who is beginning a same-sex relationship after the breakup of her marriage to a man. The series has been one of the BBC's most watched programs, and its first season just finished airing stateside on PBS. The producers have filmed a second season, and a third is planned.
Following RuPaul's Drag Race favorite Carmen Carrera's appearance in the Marco runway show, a new change.org petition is calling on lingerie giant Victoria's Secret to reach out to Carrera and invite the trailblazing icon to become the brand's first transgender model. Since her Drag Race days, Carrera has been making headlines as a show-stopping part of W Magazine's Showgirls and a voice for transgender women through outlets such as GLAAD.
Ryan Murphy's American Horror Story has been renewed for a fourth season. The 13th episode fourth season will debut in 2014. The current third season, Coven, set a series record with its premiere episode and has been the best rated installment of the series so far.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Cindy Lauper. Big shout out to Windy City Clearcast.
Culture Club, Culture Club, Culture Club. Theater,
music,
dance,
art,
performance,
provocative,
hilarious,
exciting,
weird,
innovative,
campy,
edgy,
original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of November 11th, 2013, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Timeline Theater Company has another formidable production, says the Chicago Tribune, about The Normal Heart, Larry Kramer's landmark drama about the AIDS crisis. The Chicago Sun-Times calls The Normal Heart breathtaking, and Time Out Chicago awards it 5 stars. Don't wait to get tickets to The Normal Heart's limited run at stage 773. Visit timelinetheater.com.
The Tony Award-winning Miss Saigon comes to Aurora. From the creators of Les Miserables comes this passionate story of love, loss, war, and family. Filled with intense imagery and unforgettable orchestrations, experience what critics have called better than Broadway. Miss Saigon at Paramount Theater. For tickets, visit ParamountAurora.com. That's ParamountAurora.com. Miss Saigon is playing now through November 24th.
Three distinguished Chicago actors bring to life Irish playwright Conor McPherson's exploration of three generations of Irishmen in Port Authority, now playing at Writers Theatre. The interlocking stories of three men at different stages of life weave together a tale that is both spirited and moving in its portrait of the most remarkable, ordinary lives. Chicago favorite William Brown directs in the Writers Theatre bookstore space, a setting so intimate you'll feel a part of the conversation. For tickets to Port Authority, visit writerstheater.org.
Critically acclaimed for their athletic and sensual moves, River North Dance Chicago returns to the Harris Theater November 16th and 17th only, with all new works and some of the country's most versatile dancers. River North Dance Chicago, November 16th and 17th at the Harris Theater. Visit rivernorthchicago.com. Tickets start at just $30.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com.
Keep moving, follow around the room.
Well, it has been a historic week if you are a GLBT or allied person in the state of Illinois. On Tuesday, November 5th, 2013, the Illinois House of Representatives, it's a long-awaited vote. The vote happened, and they passed the historic Freedom to Marry bill. Now, the Illinois Senate agreed with the House version of the bill, and the bill now is on the desk of Governor Pat Quinn, who has promised to sign it in the next couple of weeks. I'm thrilled to just continue following this story with my good friend and tireless Midwest Regional Director for Lambda Legal, Jim Bennett. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Oh, I am on cloud nine. I'm great.
Congratulations to you and so many people really and truly on the front lines of making this happen since a lawsuit was filed a couple of years ago now, almost in 2012. That's right. Is that when it was?
Yeah. And probably this particular fight goes all the way back to 2009, I think. So it's a long time coming.
So talk to me first about just briefly about what led up today. Obviously, on our previous show, we talked with you about what was the problem, what happened in May when the vote didn't come to the floor, and the frustration with the bill sponsors and the Speaker of the House, Madigan, of why the vote was not called. And in essence, we were told they didn't have the votes, and they were asked not to call the vote yet. But just talk to me a little bit about who were the key people that in the House and in the Senate who helped shepherd this bill along and how we even got to Tuesday morning.
Yeah, well, the Senate passed it on February 14th, so they've been done a while, although Senator Stain stayed involved with our coalition in a really strong way throughout the time, so she deserves extra credit. And really, of course, the key in the House side is Representative Harris. And so, as you may remember, at the end of May, when he didn't call the bill, he gave a really heartbreaking speech, you know, on the floor, where he had said that his colleagues needed more time to go back to their communities, and they wanted to hear from their constituents, and that they would be back in the veto session to pass it. And so we really built our coalition around that promise of his colleagues. And the goal was to get as many gays and lesbians and families and allies and church members and businesses and anyone that would to go meet with the representatives in their offices or wherever they could find them and make sure they realized how important it was to bring the Freedom to Marry to Illinois. And
yeah.
So we started with 40 targets, which ultimately got whittled down to about 14. And, you know, we had a solid roll call and we're able to get it passed in this week. It feels like it's been months. It's hard to believe it just happened.
So talk to me about what has happened for marriage equality in the U.S. since February of this year when the Senate passed this and the momentum on a national level that may have helped these other representatives give a yes vote?
Well, I mean, the fact that our bill is SB-10 was because we believed we would be the 10th state to pass it. So we ended up being 15, which is still a great number. But it has been huge. I mean, we've had I think psychologically for Illinois, Minnesota was really big since it's, you know, it's here in the Midwest with us. It's not one of the coastal winds. And then more than anything, it was the decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in Windsor, because that was extraordinary, where you had the U.S. Supreme Court recognize that our families are not equal and that the federal government is discriminating against gay and lesbian families. And so for them to strike down that provision in the Defense of Marriage Act, and then beyond that, to have President Obama really instruct his Justice Department and the IRS to interpret it in the broadest way possible. So, you know, for example, for people that are married in other states, no matter where they live in the United States, they're able to access all of the IRS benefits and deductions and not have to pay that estate tax. the decision became even clearer for Illinois because civil unions were specifically not included in that. So people that, like, for example, were married in Iowa and then came back to Illinois, they would be covered, but a civil union in Illinois would not provide you that coverage.
Right.
And I think that was instrumental in starting to shift public opinion. And we saw in Illinois alone, the percentage of Illinoisans to support marriage, we were already above 50%, but I believe in the last poll was somewhere around 57-58%. Mm-hmm. And that's a dramatic increase in such a short amount of time.
You talk about this coalition. I know it's a lot of different nonprofits and individuals and the couples that were all lending their faces and lives and families and stories to give a face to this bill, SB 10. But it really was going to take a bipartisan vote, right? And it was really going to take as well different minority groups besides LGBT to come together and join together to do the right thing here. There was a lot of attention when the vote didn't go through that perhaps this was being blocked by African-American members of the House or by religious groups. How do you think that story played out this past Tuesday?
Certainly the a majority of a lot of people came together to pass it. The Black Caucus was there for us. I mean, we had really strong sponsors in Representative Mitchell and Representative Duncan, and ultimately the Representative Gordon Smith from Peoria signed on as a sponsor right before the floor vote. And they, among many, many others, worked the bill very hard and brought almost the entire Black Caucus in as supporters of the bill. And I think, again, that was a credit to, like, so many groups in the coalition, but I especially think Affinity and the Urban League of Chicago and others that really made sure that this is everyone's issue. And so it was important for our African American representatives to meet, Black lesbian couples and gay couples and family members, and this issue mattered to them as well, because we are everywhere, as they say. And then the Republicans, I would have liked a few more Republicans than we had. We had two sponsors, Republican sponsors, Sandek and Sullivan, that were already signed on early this spring. And there's only one other that joined us, Representative Tom Cross, and to his credit, he was an early vote, so when they first start voting, we were pretty sure that he would be with us. But I wasn't positive. I thought if we hit 60, he may not join. And he was one of the first votes to be cast. So it was to his credit as well. Mm. But I have to say that I think it's going to be very hard for anyone, Democrat or Republican, to run for statewide office in Illinois if they were on the wrong side of this issue. And I was surprised that we did not. I think there was a lot of Republicans that wanted to vote on this, and they were afraid, either because of people in their party or from politics, not to join us. And I imagine that's a vote they're going to have to explain to their children and grandchildren, and it's not one I would want to have to take credit for.
It's been really important for this entire coalition campaign initiative and support for SB 10 to have a face. And one of the big key components of that was something that you and I were a part of a week ago when the House came back to session, the big march on Springfield. What do you think that did in terms of in the pouring rain and on a gray day in Springfield to have so many people show up? I think there would have been more if it had been a sunny day.
Yeah, right.
But they were willing to travel to Springfield. What do you think that did? And what did it do to have so many different types of people stand on the stage and lend their support or stand on the steps of the Capitol?
Oh my God, I thought it was beautiful. I mean, the most beautiful, ugliest, rainiest day in Springfield. But they, to the I mean, there were so many people that worked on that march on Springfield, and I think it was pivotal. I mean, we were starting to feel things going in our favor about the week before. You sort of have these moments where things begin to click. But to get down to Springfield, and, you know, it's usually hard to get. If you have 3,000 people at a march in Springfield, it's really good. And because you can fill the rotunda, and it just has a big physical appearance. And we had at least, I would think, at least 5,000 people. I think the estimates were 3 to 5. And for people to give up their Tuesday, and knowing that it was going to rain all day, it was raining up here in Chicago, it was raining all across the state, all across the country, I think. And it was cold. I mean, you know, and you know, just see bus after bus. I was down in Springfield the day before, and Lambda Legal had 3 buses. We had 2 that we were doing with schools in the area, and then our plaintiffs and staff and volunteers were in one. And they called me from one of the rest areas, and they said, "The rest area is like a sidetrack bathroom on Saturday night.
It's
completely packed with gays." And they're like, "This is going to be huge." And to watch, like, the people just pour out of those buses, and everyone was in such great spirits. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think we've talked about this before because it's similar to sort of our church's philosophy. But, you know, there's a real beauty and joy in our fights. And to have, like, these incredible artists like Stephen Leonard and C.C. Carter and so many others, Honey West, along with our politicians, and everyone just stood there, didn't they? I mean, it was, you know, it's 5 hours in a real driving rain, and everyone was there. But it also had a huge effect, I believe, on the reps, because the politicians began coming out because I think they felt like they had to be there. They had to be part of that witness. And it was when Jesse White first took his stand on marriage equality, which was really...
Yeah, I saw him
historic
too.
For us, and I believe it set in motion both for the representatives up here, like our sponsors. It showed the kind of incredible support they had behind them, and it also showed the level of expectation we had to see that vote being called. And I'll just never forget it. I mean, I'm from Springfield growing up, and I've seen a lot of rallies, and I've counter protested against ones that were against LGBT people and were so painful. And so to see all those beautiful rainbow umbrellas and us marching around the Capitol, it was just something I will never forget.
Yeah. And so many young people, such diversity of color, such an age, and to have so much clergy there and so many churches there. I thought it was really a beautiful, and people with kids, straight and gay.
Oh, yeah.
Families,
yeah.
Was a really
so many.
Huge and thing. When do you see that?
Agreed. And straight and gay. And the thing that I loved was, it was so beautiful, and it was also such a kind. I mean, you know, we had a lot of people in lobbying our legislators, and for a lot of our targets, we would have the bus meet at their district office and then go down, and so they'd also lobby their legislators at the time. And then the next day to have the opposition's rally, and it was not nearly as diverse, and it also... it also was just so... You know, they're just such sad people. So they would have... You know, they're all in black, and they all just look completely dire and sad. And you know, you're working against families, and you're working against respecting the love of everyone. And so I have to think that had an impression on the representatives too, to see sort of the tone and the mood of our rally compared to our opposition. So,
when did you know Tuesday morning? Because this vote, you know, could have happened anytime last week. It could have happened this week. They said that it would happen by the end of this week. But I guess there was a part of me that kind of thought they'd make us wait to the last damn minute. So I was a little caught off guard. I was traveling back to Chicago on Tuesday and saw on Facebook they're starting to debate SB 10, and went and started watching the live stream. So did you anticipate it happening on Tuesday? Was there a heads up?
Not until Tuesday morning. We expected it on Wednesday. I didn't think they would go till Thursday because there's just too much that can go wrong on the last day, that someone gets sick or there's an illness, whatever. And Wednesday there was going to be a rally of some of our opposition. Cardinal George is bringing down people. And I was in Representative Harris's office on Tuesday morning, and there was two key people that we were paying attention. One, which has been in the news a lot lately, which is Representative Jacobson, whose son was dying. She was at his bedside in a hospice. And so I don't think the other side expected the vote because they knew she was absent, and she's a key co-sponsor. She's been her daughter's a lesbian. She's been an incredible ally for us for, you know, generations probably. And she had let Greg know that that she wanted to be there and that she was ready. And so, you know, Representative Harris, along with the House leadership, made the decision that it was better to go that day. And I think it was great for us because the opposition was a little bit caught off guard. I think all of us were. And, when you have the votes, you call the bill, and we had the vote. So it was sort of funny, wasn't it? You expect after this long build-up, it all felt a little bit orderly and fast.
Yeah.
You know?
But, talk to me, for people who weren't able to watch it on live stream, talk about the debates. Were there any key moments that pro and con for or against the bill that stuck out to you?
A couple. There was on our side there was a speech by Representative Franks that he's a suburb guy up here in the suburbs of Chicago, and he really struggled with this bill at first, and he joined us probably in early May, but wasn't as excited, I think, about it. And he gave, I felt like, one of the most passionate and powerful speeches on the floor in favor of marriage. Representative Harris was extraordinary. Our sponsor, I mean, he ran the bill through masterfully, but he also stood the entire time, which they do, but to watch him when our opposition would speak, and to watch him, he was very respectful, but he stared at them each time. And I thought that would be really hard to be able to have to listen to some of that. And I also thought Representative Feigenholz gave an amazing speech where she talked about how hard it would be for the openly gay and lesbian sponsors to have to ask for equality from their colleagues. And she made it clear that this vote was personal to a lot of them.
Yeah.
On the opposition side, I mean, David Harris was ridiculous. He's a representative, a Republican representative that we actually thought we could get. And he started to talk about a Broadway musical that influenced his decision. And so, of course, I'm there thinking, well, we got him. You can't talk about Broadway musicals and not vote with the gays, you know.
Yeah.
And sure enough,
a Jewish Broadway musical.
I know, right? And he's talking about Fiddler on the Roof and how tradition, and then slams the gays. And I just thought, you haven't even seen this, because everyone knows he accepts that daughter at the end
of
the
That's what
play.
I thought.
Anyway,
that's what I thought.
I'm like a moron. And and then the other one that was sort of painful was Senator Representative Flowers, who represents Oak Brook or Oak Parkamine, and she's African American, and she really had a real contempt for gays and lesbians. It was probably the ugliest and most hurtful speech on the floor, and that came as a bit of a shock. But, you know, for the most part, it was a very respectful debate. The speaker spoke in favor of the bill, which is very unusual, and the stories were really personal, and it was really a beautiful sort of thing to watch for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. These people that usually talk over each other and walk out and come back in, and everyone was really attentive, and you could feel that they knew that they were really making a historic vote that was going to, be remembered for generations. And those opportunities don't come along very often in the Illinois Assembly, and they sure did the right thing.
So in the vote, of course, the vote now is electronic, so you push a button, right? And so immediately we saw that there were 61 votes, 61 to 54 in favor, and that the bill passed. What was the feeling at that moment? And then were there amendments to the vote, and what happened immediately following the vote?
There was relief, I think, more than anything else. The thing that's interesting about Illinois is that they can change their vote at any time. during the time that it's open. So a lot of times, you know, we were up to 58, 59, and it stood there, which for me felt like an hour. It's probably 3 seconds. And if it looks like it's not going to happen, sometimes you'll have people change their vote and it drops back down. And so, you know, it went through, you know, pretty quickly, and it was just, you know, complete joy. There was one amendment. There were actually two amendments to the bill. One was more of a procedural one that, because we were in a special session, we had to remove the effective date, meaning that if it would have passed in May, for example, we could have passed it with 60 votes, and then it would have gone into effect 30 days after the signing. Because it passed in a veto session, it will go into effect on June 1st, and we had to remove that effective date. The second amendment was a request by two Catholic senator or representatives that wanted assurances that there was a religious freedom exemption that would be in the bill, and so the exemption was already part of our Illinois Human Rights Act, and as you know, one of the biggest goals of Land Illegal and the ACLU and certainly all of our groups was that we wanted to win marriage, but not at the expense of losing any of our rights that we had earned in the Illinois Human Rights Act. And so the amendment emphasizes that this exemption already exists within the Illinois Human Rights Act, that it does not alter or harm any of the protections we had already achieved. So it was, you know, all of us were perfectly comfortable with that amendment as well. And we expect the governor to sign it. The date I'm hearing is November 20th, but I'm sure it could change in the next couple of days. Mm-hmm. And we're almost there.
So let's just talk practically. What does this practically mean for me or you or any other LGBT person in the state of Illinois? The process by which this impacts our lives.
Are you planning to get married, Amy?
I don't know. So many people have asked on Facebook when I was so excited on Tuesday. I'm speed dating. I'm figuring it out. I'm figuring out what my best option is.
You could make some news for us.
I could actually probably do some sort of reality television show. Maybe that's what I'll do with this sanctity of marriage that has now been bestowed upon me.
Well, I think you should. But they, so for people that want to get married, if they want to get married in Illinois, they'll be able to do so beginning June 1st. If you have a civil union in Illinois, you can, for the first year, you'll still need to get a marriage license. And we're one of the first states that are keeping civil unions in place. We're not getting rid of them as we bring in marriage, because there's a lot of usually older couples that have really benefited from civil unions, because it allows them to have the state rights, but it doesn't impact their pensions or mm-hmm. things like that, which in some cases, so for like older couples that are in retirement centers and want to be able to stay together, but they don't want the federal bind, they don't have to.
Right.
But so they'll be, for the next year, they'll be able to, couples will be able to go in and get an upgrade and get a marriage license. And there's a path to either have it solemnized there or transfer over, or you could go through, you know, have a minister or a judge or whoever's authorized to marry people to go ahead and do that. For people that need or feel like they need the marriage before or those rights before, we're encouraging them to go to other states. So, I mean, it's sort of painful, because I know, you know, we have some friends that we know are very ill that they may not make it to June 1, and it would be a huge difference in terms of pensions and estate tax, things like that, if they don't have their marriage by before June 1st. And so in some of those cases, we're encouraging people to go to, you know, one of the states, Iowa, Minnesota, or places that recognize marriage, get their license. It'll automatically become a marriage June 1 when Illinois joins the other 14 states that have marriage. But it's important to make sure you know what the rules are in those states, because some of them have waiting periods, things like that.
Right. And Of course, just before we became the 15th state, New Jersey became the 14th state. It is imminent and pending that that Hawaii's vote will happen here, perhaps making them 16. What else is on the horizon? Because obviously we still have a lot of states where they have amendments or referendums to their state that marriage is one man, one woman. So who else can we see become a part of this equality circle of states?
I think most of the, you're right. I mean, we're getting down to the majority of states that we're going to be able to achieve legislatively is becoming a much smaller list. So I expect that New Mexico, they had oral arguments before the New Mexico Supreme Court, and I feel fairly confident that we're going to see a marriage victory there when that decision comes out. That Hawaii feels all but certain for them to do it. And then between Lambda Legal and the ACLU, there are, Lambda has marriage cases in West Virginia, Virginia, Nevada. ACLU has cases, I believe, in Pennsylvania, Arizona. And then there's other cases going on with, you know, with different groups or lawyers. And our strategy is pretty clear in all of those cases that we have federal claims and all of those cases we expect to begin working through the courts. And our expectation is that within 2 to 5 years that we're back before the U.S. Supreme Court and we're pushing for DOMA to be completely wiped off and have marriage in all 50 states. And I think we're on the path for that. And Illinois is going to play a really important role in that because the court looks, one, to see that they're not getting too far ahead of public opinion. And when you bring Illinois into the fold, the fifth most populous state, you move to having tens of thousands of people now covered. And it was also a legislative victory, which I think the Supreme Court likes. So we're on our way. I mean, the challenge I think before us now, and it's similar to what's going on in the end of fight, is that we've seen our opposition make these claims of religious freedom, and what they've done is they've tied it on to our momentum, and we saw it happen here in Illinois where the Catholic Conference was pushing for an amendment that would do nothing about marriage, but it would gut our existing anti-discrimination laws, and in some cases, not even just for LGBT people, but it could be based on race or because you're a woman or their ability for contraceptives to be given to employees, things like that. And so our real fight over the next few years, I'm almost certain, is going to be to make sure that as our momentum's moving, that we don't allow this false argument of religious freedom to mean that people can use religion to discriminate against LGBT folks.
And absolutely.
That we're going to have to be very vigilant to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so great, like I said, to have so many religious leaders there in the middle of our fight and standing with us to show that this is not a religious line. I mean, there is people for and against us who speak from religious organizations and denominations, just like there are people for and against us who don't speak for religious organizations. You mentioned ENDA, and let's just talk quickly about we are recording this at the end of the week. Here on November 7th, 8th. Where is ENDA right now and how is Lambda Legal working on a federal level to make
ENDA,
sure it gets passed?
Yeah, ENDA just passed the Senate today. And they, one of many of our groups, Lambda and HRC included, we're concerned that there are some religious freedom exemptions that we're not comfortable with, but there is an amendment to even make it greater, which would have been crazy. Like to hear they have this anti-discrimination bill and you built discrimination into the very bill of who it's supposed to protect. And the Senate fought that back, successfully, which was great. And they passed the bill and it goes to the House, where it's almost certainly, according to Boehner,
is not going to get a vote, which is really a shame because I, you know, probably no different than the budget battle we just had, that if that vote went to the floor, I think we'd have a decent chance of passing. And that's, I mean, that bill has been now, I think, 18 years in the, you know, in our government. And we have over half of our country that don't have any protections on workplace discrimination, housing, things like that. So how crazy would it be in some of these states where if we won marriage and then you put out a picture of your spouse on your desk and they can fire you for being gay? Like, I mean, so there's a lot of work to do throughout our movement, but everything is moving in the progressive direction.
Yes. How do people get involved if they want to get involved with either ENDA or marriage equality across the U.S.? What are some great resources and ways to be helpful that you could share with listeners in Illinois or in other states?
I would say in Illinois, and especially if you have questions on the marriage bill that both Lambda Legal and ACLU have really good frequently asked question sheets, and both have help desk. You know, we're at lambdalegal.org. ACLU is ACLU-Illinois.org. And I think for ENDA, it's really any of the groups. Like HRC is certainly a leader in that, Freedom to Marry, Lambda Legal, ACLU, NCLR. GLAD. I mean, it's everyone's really working together on a lot of these fronts. And our Windy City Times website, which has a great portal to all of our groups. I just think there's a lot of places that people need your time and talents and other resources, as you say. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage people to step up. It's a good time to be part of the movement.
Absolutely. Jim Bennett is the Midwest Regional Director of Lambda Legal. He also is a good friend of ours and continues to bring these stories of equality and the work that's happening on a grassroots level and in among the lawmakers to make change that advances the LGBT community to being equal under the law across the United States. That is their goal. Fairness and equality, and we appreciate the work they do. Jim, congratulations. I hope you can get a little rest this week because next week it'll be something else. So thank you
this
for being on
the front
week.
Lines.
It's
no
a party week.
This week.
That's right. It's a party week.
Thank
so
you
go
for
celebrate.
Your work, too.
You are welcome. And we'll be on next week. There's going to be so much more coming up. I've got Deborah, who is one of our performers, performing for us at the March on Springfield. Also, Dr. Peter Hayes coming up, talking about anti-Semitism and the Holocaust, which is very exciting. And then, man, the holiday is around the corner. So many reasons to celebrate as we head on into the holidays. Have a great week, everyone.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.